Welcome to the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden, your host. Happy New Year, by the way. I'll probably forget later, so let me get it out of the way. Hope you're having a great holiday season. I guess we're at the tail end of it. Most people are back to work, if they ever got any time off to begin with, that is. So hope you had a great time, got to spend it with family and friends, and of course with your dog. I've been making the most of it, but we'll talk about that later. This week on the Upland Nation podcast, something I've been meaning to do for a while and was prompted by a Facebook comment last week. Let's take a close-up look at one of my top three game birds. America's bird, the sharp-tailed grouse. I've made a study for several years, and I'll share what I've learned from my own boots on the ground, plus expert advice from pro guides and avid hunters. Put it all together, so if you're thinking about a trip to the prairies, you'll be better prepared. Of course, other things as well, strategies and tactics, gun and ammo recommendations, where to go and not go, and when to chase them, and a few of my own hunting stories that I hope you'll learn from. Once again, I learned the hard way, you learn the easy way. But plenty else on the agenda as well. We'll take a look at your hunting trips in the last few weeks. We'll look at the poll, the Upland Nation Index poll. How many dogs do you think each of us on average owns? We'll cover that. Our Handle It segment answers a listener question on hunting two dogs together. And I got a public access tip for you rough grouse hunters out there. So lots going on. Starting with my own hunting season. So far, the weather's cooperating. Kiboshed one short trip. I shortened a trip. How's that due to weather? But last weekend, good news. There is some precipitation, which means the chucker and quail hunters are a little bit happy, especially the chucker hunters. All the birds I cleaned after my last trip had green cheatgrass shoots in their crop instead of those desiccated cheatgrass seeds that I'd been finding up until now. One great lesson learned yet again. I've talked about this before. You know, you shoot a chucker, and my buddy Tom shot this one. It glided over the cliff and down into the canyon, as they're wont to do every once in a while. Tom marked it on his GPS. We hunted the rest of the way around that canyon down the next draw and came out on the old muddy dirt road, always heading towards where Tom marked that bird. There's a creek bottom and lots of brush, and we had two dogs on the ground, and we were kind of sort of half-ass hunting on our way back to the truck, always checking the GPS to make sure we're getting close. And about the time Tom starts thinking, you know, we might want to send the dogs into the brush for the... Oh, never mind. Here comes Flick with a chucker in his mouth, trotting down the muddy road. I'm thinking, wow, it happened again. And he's, you know, he's pretty good at that. But again, the lesson is... Mark the birds, swing back around. If you can, come into the wind on that return trip, and you might just get lucky and pick up that bird that you thought you'd lost. Good boy, Flick. Good mark, Tom. Good shooting, Tom, by the way. And lots of fun to see, you know, see when a plan comes together. All right, just a moment or two, and then we will be out and on the prairies talking about sharptails. First off, the Upland Nation podcast is brought to you in part by sageandbreaker.com. Gun care products crafted at the highest caliber. New year, new products, free shipping always. Learned a valuable lesson from founder and operator Fred Bohm. He said something that I'm going to memorize. For metal on metal contact, good gun grease beats gun oil any day. And they've got a new gun grease that I truly do like. It is well worth the investment, so take a look at it. It's all at sageandbreaker.com. So how you doing? Well, pretty good, I guess. The last few weeks have been good to most of the hunters in this crowd, and I appreciate your letting me know about it every Monday morning on Facebook. Brian Wormick had a father and son outing. It was cold, but it looks like they did a pretty good job. The tailgate photo is self-explanatory. Although, Brian, who took the picture? Your son? Is that why he wasn't in it? Dan Lenson went for the big country. Boy, that looks familiar. In fact, really familiar. That photo looks like a place I might go. Glad you got there. And interestingly, snow-free ground. Same for Brandon Fowler. He's got a shot of what looks like a wire hair and a pointer slammed in a little clearing next to a big pile of brush. I hope something got up out of there, and I hope you connected with it. Miles Burdett was jump shooting ducks while hunting quail was more productive than decoys and breaking ice that morning. I understand that. Ben Warner, I'm jealous again. And I always am, but I appreciate your sharing your great days with us and your inspiration. Good job, both Bernie and Callie. Always good to see them in a picture as well. And then Judith Warner, I think you're related. She says she loves that handsome young man. I think she means the one in the middle on that picture. Good luck to all of you as you continue stringing it out. I don't know about you, but here in Oregon, well, in a couple of our neighboring states, the season is still going on. So we're going to stretch it as far as possible, and I'll have more reports on where I'm going and why I'm going there and that sort of thing as we continue on through January. Again, Happy New Year. My name is Scott Linden. I'm the host of the Upland Nation podcast. Sharp-tailed grouse. As I said, one of my favorites, probably at the top one or two. I love hunting anything if there's a dog involved, but beyond that, there's something to be said for what Montana calls big sky country. And that's why I go. And so let's start off this party with a quick story. I was in one spot where a Brittany, I was working with a pro guide on some project. Anyway, his Brittany had slammed into a point and was just quivering with anticipation. One bird gets up behind me. One bird gets up too far left. One bird gets up too far right. And then finally, one fat bird gets up right in front of me and goes straight away. Well, the Brittany and I were both satisfied because I dropped that bird and the Brit chased it. It fell about 100 yards away, and thank you, everybody, at Pig Eye Outfitters for a great trip and several birds in the bag. That's one of the ways it happens when you're having a good day on sharp-tailed grouse. I call them America's bird because they are native, unlike chuckers and pheasants, for that matter. And they've been around, well, as long as we've been around. You know, the Indians were feeding on them. The settlers passing through were feeding on them. They were there when the buffalo started roaming centuries ago. They fed all of those folks and Colonel George Armstrong Custer and his cavalry when they could get them. You know, Custer had dogs, mainly coursing dogs, but he had a few bird dogs too and enjoyed the occasional chase of sharp tails out there. A lot of sodbusters and California-bound pioneers on the Oregon Trail probably survived thanks to sharp-tailed grouse. It still maintains a foothold in the West and Midwest. It's not endangered in any way in most places. There are some subspecies that are either completely gone or at such small population levels, there's no hunting allowed on them. But in most places, most sharp-tails are huntable. I'll cover some of that in a few minutes. The challenge becomes, of course, investing the boot leather and the energy once you find some places to go. I'll give you a quick list on those places real soon, but in the meanwhile, let's kind of just take a look at this bird a little bit. They reside on those vast swaths of publicly owned grassland that we can all access. Also, on a lot of the ranch and farm properties that are in any number of states' walk-in programs. Those end up being some of the more productive places to go, and in large part because they can access some of the feed crops next to, you know, the walk-in properties, which are usually CRP land of one sort or another. So if you can, that's where I'd start my search. But my search in this particular case, another Montana story, started about 6,000 feet, and we climbed another 1,000 feet before we saw my wire hair. At that point, it was Manny. Kind of slowing down and cat dancing into a point. The Sharpies jumped before we got anywhere near the dog, let alone the birds, but all but one headed farther away. One of them, probably the slowest learner in the group, started heading in my direction. I turned to Lynn Berlin, one of my camera guys. I said, "Watch this." I know, that's the kiss of death right there. But in this case, it worked. That bird came right over, just like a driven pheasant in a European hunt. And I actually hit it. It landed right at Lynn's feet. He got the whole thing, full frame, the whole way. You can watch that. That was a trip to Montana with pro guide Al Godori, out near Big Timber, Montana, which is one of the many places I would recommend you look in your sharptail search. It was one of the rare examples of sharptails cooperating with the humans. Usually we're the ball and they're the Louisville slugger, but late season bunches are kind of funny to deal with. Number one, hard to get close, perfect example. Number two, with that many birds in a bunch, you might get lucky once in a while. You probably won't see a lot of great dog work. You probably won't be walking up on a covey flush because they'll be long gone. A single or two may stick around, and I'll talk more about that as we get deeper into this discussion. But most of the time, they're going to be flying long before you get there. They have got a lot of pairs of eyes. You know, I talk a lot about quail and chuckers putting a sentry on a high spot, whether it's a rock or a fence post. Well, with sharptails, it's the whole bunch. They are about as paranoid a bird species as I've ever met. So be cautious. One of the things that I learn every season again is to keep it quiet, be stealthy, even take the jangly stuff off your dog's collar. And if you don't need it desperately, I would turn off any beepers or anything like that. The dogs don't mind. In fact, if you've got a big running dog like Flick, this is tailor-made for them. You know, the prairies where sharptails live are, I mean, they're endless. You can see to the far horizon and the curvature of the earth when you get there. Often, there's some rolling hills, and in some places, and I'll talk more about it, there are some actual real hills and some gullies and ravines, and have shot birds in some of those as well, especially on windy days. But for the most part, unclipping the lead on a big running pointing breed and a set of fresh batteries in your GPS collar will help you immensely, especially if that dog is steady when he does pin a bird or a bunch of birds. The cover's short, so you gotta be stealthy. Get in shape, and if your dog hits a point, get on it ASAP. They're fledged far from the interference or influence of man, these sharp-tailed grouse. So if you're a hunter looking for the untamed natural world distilled to its essence, you can't go wrong. The upper Midwest and the Rocky Mountain West are a great adventure no matter what. But if you're chasing sharptails, you're going to see the same country in likely the same condition as it was when the Shoshones were walking it, when the buffalo were crossing it, and when the pioneers were piloting their Conestoga wagons. I'm kind of partial to that kind of historic aspect. It really does kind of humble a guy to be standing in a place that may have not seen any traffic at all since the Oregon Trail traffic passed by. And in fact, there are places where you can actually walk in the Oregon Trail. It's pretty cool. So think about that aspect as well. And then pull out your calendar and start your planning. And remember this, there are really two sharptail seasons. The one you can hunt and the one you can't. The first one is, especially the upper Midwest and even into Calgary, Alberta, that country up there, the Saskatchewan and Alberta provinces, to be more exact, where a lot of the big-time dog trainers will work their dogs in the summertime. They get up early. You can have that. And they're working birds that are basically naive. They're young birds from this year's crop, and their young pointing dogs can get a lot of bird contacts with a lot of birds that will cooperate pretty well. Unfortunately, that means by the time we get there, those birds have savvied up quite a bit. Not so bad. There's still a chance, and that happens when the sharptail season officially opens for hunting. In many states, the good news is that's earlier than all the other game bird seasons. Mid-September, sometimes the 1st of September. In one or two states, it's October, but for the most part, we can get a couple weeks jump on all the other seasons, and that's great news. And your dog will get some great work on still cooperative birds. That's the best news. The challenge is, it's a little warm out there. Like I said, when I talk to pro trainers who are up in that country, they're up before the crack of dawn, and by 8 or 9 o'clock, those dogs are put up for the day. So you want to be careful about the heat. Early season, basically desert with grasses growing on it. Those two things are a combination that may be worth being careful about. Most of your success will come early in that season, as soon as you can get on birds and start working them. Some of you, and like I said, at least in one case, I know you were successful not 2 weeks ago on sharptails, which is basically the end of the season for most of us. So it does work. The odds are against us, but if you're out there chasing pheasants on some of the grasslands that hold them, and a sharpie gets up, it's still legal, and boy, consider that a bonus. The challenge becomes birds will flock up. They'll get into fairly good-sized groups. Again, all those pairs of eyes and ears listening for the sound of a truck door slam or you talking to your buddy about the football game last Monday night. Whatever it is, they're going to be a bit more hinky this time of year than they are going to be earlier in the season. So bear that in mind. Don't discount the opportunities, especially in lesser traveled locations. Now, what also happens later in the season is the weather gets a little bit funny. Whether it's high winds, cold weather, cold temperatures, or snow, sometimes they'll move to other cover. Now, it works the other way as well. In fact, I'll never forget. This was incredible. The first time I hunted sharptails with a pro guide, it was Al Godori again. Thank you, Al, for taking me to school on sharpies any number of times. It was really hot. So we went down into a little, I'll call it a swale, and it was covered with a low-growing, I think it was snowberry bushes. It might have been buffalo berry, but it was about 2 feet tall. And I wondered why we were going down in there. Number one, because it was just shin-tangling mess. It was the kind of stuff you had to walk really carefully in. But once we got down in it, I understood. It was overstory with a clear understory. So those birds were in there out of the sun getting shade. This particular place also happened to be near one of the few water sources, so that helped a lot. But look for that. Look for shade in the really hot early season temperatures, and then look for shelter of other sorts as the weather starts deteriorating. I've hunted sharptails in bona fide mountains, if you will, in North Dakota. And the reason they were in the steep coulees and the gullies was that's where the wind was calmer. That's where the choke cherries, one of their favorite foods, were. And that's where they could basically shelter up from the cold and the snow that was building up by the day out there. So later in the season, look for protection from weather. Early in the season, look for protection from, well, warm weather. Bringing a bird to bag in either case will require stealth, patience, and flexibility in your tactics. That might be a good way to put it. Here's my late season success story. We were walking one of those coulees, and we had, I think there were four or five of us making, we were there, it was long story short, we had a bunch of guys, we didn't know we were going to be at the lodge, and we were making a TV show, and so I thought, oh heck, let's have a party. So we spaced people a little bit like a chucker hunt, somebody at the very top, somebody in the middle, somebody halfway down the middle, and then someone at the very bottom. We're walking, trying to keep a straight line, safety first, that sort of thing. And not much to speak of until we got kind of where that, you know, the ridge peters out and swings around and the cover evaporated down lower. That's when I heard the wings, and they started at the top. From the top, one bird crossed from right to left in front of our lead man, the guy halfway down, the guy halfway past halfway down, and then to Joe, my good friend from North Carolina, at the very bottom, who'd never even seen a sharp tail in his life. I think everybody took at least one and maybe two shots at that bird. By the time it was down to the bottom, Joe got credit for the final shot that finally put that bird into the choke cherry tangle. Luckily, we had a great wire-haired pointing griffon with us that snuck it out of there and brought it back. So, you know, there's a lot of ways to do this, and if one isn't working, try another one. Sometimes hunting them like pheasants or chuckers is exactly the way to do it. Up to you. We're just getting warmed up here. It's the Upland Nation Podcast. I'm Scott Linden. We are talking sharp tails. Should you ever, ever consider coming out, I'll call it out west, one of those fascinating birds that still has a hold on my head and my heart. And the Upland Nation Podcast is brought to you by Dr. Tim's Performance Dog Food. Learn more at drtims.com. Whatever kind of hunting you're doing this time of year, the weather, the sheer mileage your dog has put on will have had a cumulative effect. Stamina is the priority, and keeping a dog healthy is critical. It sounds funny, but it's true. One of the most important ingredients in a Dr. Tim's Performance dog food formula is porcine plasma. It's a pig byproduct, if you will, but it's rich in important vitamins and minerals and an excellent source of essential amino acids, all the building blocks to your dog's muscles and bones that will contribute to stamina, especially later in the season or later in a multi-day hunt. Learn more about all the ingredients and where they all come from and why they are all critical, and that's why they're in a Dr. Tim's Performance Dog Food, at drtims.com. 30% off your first order. Just use the code UPLANDNATION. All right. One of the other things that deteriorates this time of the season is our shooting abilities. And I was reminded of that again when I missed on two gimme valley quail last weekend. So I'm going back to the drawing board and rereading Buzz Fawcett's book, Instinctive Shooting, The Making of a Master Gunner. And Buzz is asking me through his book. Once again, thank you, Buzz, for starting me off on this wonderful adventure. Asking me to shoot 100 targets a week at the range. Oh, I know, that's a tall order, but believe me, if you've seen my shooting, you know I could use the help. And you know what's going to help me do that 100 targets a week? Electronic earplugs from Electronic Shooters Protection. Learn more at ESPAmerica.com. Whether you admit it or not, shooting at the range is going to probably create some flinching and perceived pain issues. Cut down on the noise, and I can almost guarantee you the so-called pain and even the so-called or perceived flinch will minimize. Learn more about ESP America at ESPAmerica.com. 30-day money-back trial. Get fitted locally. Go to the dealer locator page, type in your address, and find somebody who will help you become a better shooter because you will have avoided all of those noise-related problems. All right, welcome to Handle It. That's the Upland Nation podcast segment on dog training and related stuff. Most of the time, stuff that I've learned the hard way, so you don't have to. Great question from Adam Harnage. And if you have one, feel free to contact me on the Facebook pages, Wing Shooting USA or Upland Nation. I think you call them private messages because that way I can isolate them and put them in another file and answer them here, for that matter. Adam's question is about hunting a six-month-old Brittany and a 10-year-old German Shorthair together. And we've all heard, young dog can learn from the old dog. That's absolutely true, Adam. They can learn the good stuff and the bad stuff, so keep that in mind. But I have some more answers for that as well. Here's my personal opinion on that. And if anybody has a differing opinion, I'd love to hear about it. So contact me at the Facebook pages. First off, a good hunting dog needs to think for itself and develop some boldness and self-confidence in the field. If they're following another dog, well, they're not going to do that. They're just going to follow. Or worse, they're going to play grab ass or bother the other brace mate in your AKC walking field trial. The pup should think for itself and make some mistakes and learn from them. Now, Adam was concerned about a pup busting the other dog's point, which can lead to all sorts of things, unsteadiness on the older dog or a dog fight for that matter. But here are some other things that might happen. That pup might steal the retrieve, not honor a retrieve that another dog is supposed to have. Or, and it happened with that chucker story I was telling you earlier, Flick brought back that chucker, and the moment he got close to us and the other dog, he said, that other dog may want to take this from me, so I'm going to just make a U-turn and go away from the human I'm supposed to deliver it to. Yeah, there's more downsides than upsides to hunting two dogs together, and that's without even getting into the potential for a fight because you got two males who are intact or whatever. That's another story for another time. Yeah, be judicious about it and perhaps consider not doing it most of the time. At least that's my opinion. Love to hear more from anybody else on that one. All right. Thanks, Adam, for the question, and hope that solves your problem to at least a small degree. Let's get back to the Upland Nation podcast's feature on sharp-tailed grouse. Like I said, I've been studying these birds off and on for quite a while, and then about 3 years ago, I got a magazine assignment and decided to get real serious about it. I think I've probably hunted in three or four states. We'll come to that down the road because I'll give you a listing of the places that I think are worth your visiting. But for now, some of the things that I've learned from pro guides might be of value to you if you choose to do a sharptail hunt, and I sure encourage you to do it. For the history, the heritage, the legacy, and then the incredible wide open spaces that we will see when we go out chasing these birds. Pete Rogers has an outfit called Pig Eye Outfitters, and he's in the Lewistown, Montana area, as are so many other great guides. He says the birds of the prairie will take a long view, and he means literally. Using your dog as a blind might keep one on the ground longer. In other words, you get a dog on point, and we did this. We did this once. I was in the right place at the right time. Let me say that again because it doesn't happen a lot. Right place, right time. Dog slams a point. Bird is beyond the dog, and I am directly behind the dog. That bird is looking left, right, front, but he can't look back and see me, at least not for a few moments, just enough time for me to swing around and get in a better position, set the feet, get the gun in the ready position before that bird freaks out because he sees me. Yeah, it was a hard left-right crosser, but that's better than the other way around for a cross-dominant righty. Thank you, Pete. That was great. And it worked. Okay, and then you got to breeze it all, and hopefully you do, because it's the only way you're going to get close on some of these birds and the only way that your dog is going to find them out there. Pete also recommends this for I'll call it an efficient way to hunt a big piece of prairie, and I mean really big. You know, we're sometimes doing circles of 7, 8, 10 miles when we're out there in sharptail country. Point the dog into the breeze straight ahead. Yeah, sure, probably. Drop two in the pipe, get ready for that adrenaline rush, but it may not happen because you've exhausted all your other potential. How about instead angling into the wind away from the truck, directly into it, across again, and then a tailwind on the way back with a crosswind to finish it up? You walk that circle and think about it for a moment. If the wind is blowing at your face when you start, you've got three other choices, only one of them the worst. You got a quartering wind going out, you got the wind into your face, then you got a quartering in going back, and then the wind at your back for the final lap. Think about it. It does work, and it gets you right back to the truck without having to hump, a significant amount that probably won't pay off. How about guns? Well, this is one time when I like a 12-gauge more than anything else. It does have more pellets, and that's always a help for me. But it also can reach out and touch a few more birds a few more often times. The other thing I like about a 12-gauge on those long jumping birds is we're going to do more crossing shots than we would anywhere else. And a heavier, longer gun, a little bit heavier gun, is going to smooth out that gun swing. For me, it works. It worked very well in Nebraska a couple years ago, and I became a believer. So think about that when you're going. I will tighten up my chokes just a little bit for sharptails, because quite often they will flush at a slightly longer distance. I choke mine improved cylinder in the bottom and mod in the top. If you're a good shooter, you might go a little bit tighter than that. And then I'm always shooting size sixes. A good high base six will kill a bird. If you can get a pellet or two into one, they'll generally drop. And the joy is it's level ground and you can send bird dogs out there for them and not have to worry about them falling off a cliff. So, 12-gauge, size 6 pellets, IC and mod, and you might have a little bit more luck. That's it. I've also shot birds with a 28-gauge. So practice makes perfect. All right. We're still working towards the states and the places within those states, a little bit more history lesson and preparing your dog for this big sky country. So stick around. The Upland Nation podcast is brought to you in part by HappyJackInc.com. Dog remedies of all sorts, HappyJackInc.com. I use pad coat every day of a hunt on my dog's feet. I use all sorts of other remedies as well. So thank you for listening, and thank you for your support, Joe and Manning Exum at Happy Jack. Now, taking more than one dog, despite what I told Adam, good idea. It's just about using them strategically. The country may look manicured in some of those magazine photos, but there are plenty of places for a wing-clipped Sharpie to hunker. This is probably one of the great opportunities to use a pointer and a flusher if they'll work together, or just to keep your dogs fresh, running one at a time and then spelling that dog every couple hours, especially early in the season. A good retriever will always come in handy. We have almost lost birds in so many places where you thought, yeah, I mean, it looked like a pool table from a distance, but there's plenty of places for birds. We found birds in badger holes on the far side of little rises. So if you don't have a specialized retriever, then make sure that your pointing dog is going to do a good job of retrieving as well. Personally, I try to avoid shooting doubles most of the time. I'm just not very good at it anyway, but beyond that, the idea of shooting a bird, marking it, and walking straight toward it always pays off. They're as easy to lose as any other bird, even if they're stone dead. The good news is your dog will get plenty of chances for long-distance marks. Now, let's put up that dog and look at where these birds hang out. Sharp-tailed grouse often love rolling foothills because those foothills have the components these birds need. Prairie grass that is tall enough to sway in the wind, according to my friend Graham Taylor at Montana Department of Fish and Wildlife. A little bit shorter than that, the likelihood is you might find huns. Seldom are they, you know, together, coveyed together, but, you know, the same section could hold both depending on the, like I said, the height of the grass. Pete Rogers, the pro outfitter I talked about, says they'll eat grasshoppers all season. Snowberries, rose hips, cinquefoil, leafy greens. If you can get near an alfalfa field, that's a summertime staple. If there's anything left at the end of the harvest season and the beginning of the hunting season, try and get close to alfalfa. In fact, we were hunting another swale in central Montana a few years ago, and I looked down downhill at it before we got into it, and it was as green as this colorblind guy could see. And I asked my guide at the time, Al Gadori, what that was. And he says that somebody tried to grow alfalfa there and they gave up. They didn't have enough moisture. There was no irrigation. But some of that hardy, brave, tough as nails alfalfa still comes up every year. The first thing to get it is the grasshoppers, but that'll bring some of the Sharpies in, and then the Sharpies will eat it as well. Later on in the season, they'll eat willow buds and wild plums, especially in the winter. They don't need free water like most other birds. They'll get that out of all the other things in their diet in all but the driest years. Now, if you're thinking it looks a little bit like some of those National Geographic specials out there, the Serengeti, limitless plains, distant horizons, bison and pronghorn, you know. Yeah, you wouldn't be surprised to see a grizzly or a giraffe sometime, one or the other. Watch for them all when you visit. And the farther you can get from civilization, in most cases, the better. All right, Here's the best news. When you're chasing sharptails, much of the land they love is owned by you and me. Yeah, we hire the federal government to manage it, but it's ours. The Bureau of Land Management, the Forest Service, related organizations have jurisdiction over a lot of it. Some of the states and even some of the conservation groups have sway through walk-in programs or public access of one sort or another. All free. A good map and some research could put you into sharptail country. Take a look at all the national grasslands in North and South Dakota. Ditto for Montana. Some of it over there is actually national forest. Yeah, in Wyoming and Nebraska, the same thing. Yeah, there is a Nebraska National Forest. I think that's what it's called. There's a national forest in Nebraska. And you got to go a long way to find a tree. But you don't have to go very far to find great sharptail country. In fact, for that stuff, I would focus my my search around the towns of Valentine and Mullen, which, by the way, has a sharptail shootout event every year, and it's a lot of fun. Montana, look at places like Lewistown, Big Timber. South Dakota, you can't go wrong with the Fort Pierre National Grasslands just outside of Pierre, South Dakota, but there's more out there as well. North Dakota, we found birds south and west of the town of Mott in the, I think it's the Theodore Roosevelt National Grassland. You're looking for alluvial plains spilling down from mountain ranges. Alluvial is erosion. It's all the stuff that washes off the mountains over the millennia. So kind of folded, wrinkled ground with lots of benches. And then look for, let's see. Okay, the signage. Or get the app. Or go on the website. In North Dakota, private land open to sportsmen. In Nebraska, it's called the Open Fields and Waters. In South Dakota, it's called, I've forgotten what they call it in South Dakota. It's all the walk-in areas. Everybody has an app or an atlas, and you can even get a hard copy of it, which I keep handy anyway. I still like that old school opportunity to look at the map, point the truck, and go there. Some of the best Sharpie hunting I've found is in the kind of the little miniature grasslands dotted among cornfields in North Dakota. A lot of that stuff becomes CRP and it's part of their management strategy. And if you can find the right spots and you are careful about where you're walking and where you're hunting, you might just get lucky. I know it's not easy. And if you're a public employee, I apologize, but you know, and I know both, that it's a bureaucratic web of a tangled web, public and private land and whose is whose, that sort of thing. It's a lot of work. You got to be careful about your map reading. Sometimes you're more current on land availability and accessibility than the folks who are supposed to be administering those programs. So take everything they say with a grain of salt, and the best data is the on-the-ground data. Again, that area around Pierre, South Dakota is the mecca for a lot of reasons. There's a checkerboard of public and private land, most of it contained within the Fort Pierre National Grassland. We did a horseback hunt years ago that was incredible for any number of reasons. Number one, the English setters we worked with. Thank you, everybody, who had a hand in that one. We finally saw one of those big runners at the bottom of a draw, and I climbed off. The horse followed along. Yeah, they were definitely gun broke. And we got up a couple sharptails and a couple prairie chickens. But before that happened, the fun part was the number of grasshoppers. This was mid-season. You wouldn't think they were still around, but they were. And that's, again, one of the lessons to learn. Find grasshoppers and you'll find birds in many cases. They were coming up in waves as we walked ahead. missed on the first bird, shot the second one, missed on the third bird a couple seconds later, shot the next one. One each, Sharpies and prairie chickens. Whew. I think you saw that on TV. I'm not sure. Both delivered a hand, and with a loyal horse following right behind me the whole time. That's what I like. Thank you, Bob. Your dog, oh man, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. But if he's in shape, you got a fighting chance. He'll lock up in the midst of a loose flock, and the birds will be behind him. They'll be in front of him. They'll be squirting out left and right, going away, coming at you. He'll point ridge lines when the valley floors heat up because that's where the scent is being pushed from. A tight family group of sharptails will short-circuit your dog with so much stink, he'll just crash into them. At least then you can chase him singles. Late-season birds are going to be frustrating for you and the dog, but if your dog has a long nose, you know what I mean by that, and he will point at a distance, you'll still have a chance, and eventually maybe get a picture. If you're lucky, you get a picture with your dog, too. Watch for it. Keep your cheek on the stock, your eye on the eye of the grouse, and drop that bird for your dog. If you've ever thought about conditioning your dog to a great degree, this is the reason. High mileage hunting in heat and cold. So prepare their lungs, their legs, and their pads for 5 to 15 mile days. The good news is very little rock. The bad news is more cactus than you thought. And once in a while, a rattlesnake. And if you're in the wrong coulee at the right time, the biggest porcupine you'll ever meet. Honest, we thought it was a bear. So what does Lynn do? Takes a camera, goes down right in there to get a picture. Live to tell about it. Thank you again, Lynn. Take a GPS, mark the truck, mark it twice, bring a compass and a map just in case. And if your dog doesn't have a GPS collar, well, maybe you ought to hunt pheasants instead. One more story. So I'm coming over the rise, and on the top is another Brittany, admiring the view, I thought. But no. He's honoring his brace mate, who's just over the other side, couldn't see him until then. We were talking about the view and blue grouse, and where we were going the next day for them. And then playing the same game everybody does when they first get to know each other. Who do you know that I know? And we should have been watching the dog instead, but my guide had told me to do that. And there I was being a bad listener and a bad watcher. Luckily, the Brittany got our attention and brought it to the pointing dog, and he held steady. We learned a lot that day about shooting, walking, big sky, and what a dog can do when you just cut him loose. We shot one bird out of that bunch. The rest went away for seed. Let's just put it that way. No, I wasn't shooting warning shots at them, but I was missing a lot more. But I had a good time. You will too. It's dusty. It's dry sometimes. It's beautiful. Next time you're out there, find a rose hip and take a bite just to remember all the wild stuff out there. That's all it will take. All right, I've told you about the Dakotas, Wyoming, Nebraska, Montana. Hey, there's even sharptails in Alaska. And I didn't get there this year, but I will next year. Idaho. Sometimes there's a limited season in Minnesota, Michigan, Colorado, and Wisconsin. And if you can get to the prairie provinces of Canada, all the better. Remember, you're a small dot on a big map, especially in places like the Bighorns and the Laramie Range in Wyoming, the Sand Hills in the Panhandle of Nebraska, North Dakota's Missouri Slope, South Dakota along the Missouri River, the eastern half of Montana, And as I mentioned, Big Timber and Lewistown in the center of the state, Great Falls, another excellent headquartering town. Be safe. Enjoy yourself. Leave some for seed. And take good care of your dog. If you want to talk Sharp Tails anytime, three great guides to do it with are Pete Rogers, Al Godori, and Tinker Kennels. Just look them all up. Al Godori is 6X Outfitters. Tinker Kennels, tinkerkennels.com. Pig Eye Outfitters for Pete Rogers. Great guys, love to talk about it, love to take you along. Most of the time, they're booked up solid, so you better make your reservations far in advance. And if you want to talk with me about it, well, anytime. All right, you rough grouse hunters, I got something for you coming up as well, so just stick around. The Upland Nation podcast is brought to you in part by Gunner.com. Yeah, Gunner. They make dog kennels, accessories for those kennels from covers to fans. And they make a whole bunch of Gunner gear these days, from hoodies and hats to t-shirts. If you didn't get what you wanted, tell your significant other. They will also provide her with a gift card. One size fits all. Watch the videos, find out why Gunner does make the strongest kennel, the highest rated, thousands of five-star reviews, then have some fun with the Fit Finder quiz. You can size your Gunner kennel virtually. You can even crowdsource the sizing if you'd like. Learn more about all the things they do and why I am a big believer. Learn it all at Gunner.com. This Land Is Your Land is brought to you by FindBirdHuntingSpots.com. There's new material every week to help you find places to hunt, train, and care for your dog, including some rough grouse country that by now is under several feet of snow, I'll bet, but make a note of it if you're looking to get up into the far northeast, the upper right-hand corner of the country in Maine. A lot of that logging company land is open to the public. There's a legendary 96-mile-long road called the Golden Road, built years ago by the Great Northern Paper Company. Starts at the St. Zachary border crossing, heads all the way to the mill in Millinocket. Yeah, I wonder if that means mill in somebody's native language. Anyway, a lot of that is open. Look for the newish timber cuts out there, you know, the 5 to 10 to 12-year-old regrowth. It's all in Maine, and it should hold some roughies if you're willing to put in the time and the effort. That's all along the Golden Road from St. Zachary's border crossing to the former mill at Millinocket. And don't forget that when I need hearing protection, and I need it all the time because I'm shooting a lot more these days, I go to ESPAmerica.com, take a look at all the options. There's something in there for everybody, no matter your budget. I use mine in the field and on the range. Learn more at ESPAmerica.com for electronic earplugs. All right. I want to thank you all for being a part of the Upland Nation podcast. If you liked what you heard, learn something, tell your friends. If you want to cover a topic or you have a question, talk to me at the Wing Shooting USA Facebook page or the Upland Nation Facebook page. Sure would appreciate a rating or a review wherever you get your podcast. It does help, in fact, quite a bit. Thanks for your reviews, Bullet B and Freckles Smith. Does anybody use their real name? Anyway, appreciate it anyway. Our quote this week comes from author Franklin P. Jones. He says, "Scratch a dog and you'll find a permanent job. Well, he's absolutely right, as we all know. Hey, give your dog a hug for me. Be safe out there taking newcomer hunting. I'm Scott Linden. Thanks for listening to the Upland Nation Podcast.